When Wayne said he had a special guest, I'm thinking, wait, wait, who could that be? I'm like, oh no, it's not me. Good morning, all. Every month I try to come in and come up with some pearls of wisdom to share with you. And every month I go to Wayne and say, what in the world should I talk about today? And he said, you know, it might be interesting, morning. It might be interesting to talk through how you came up with sunlight. You know, partially because I speak every month, I think some of you could almost give my talks for me, because you know kind of what I'm thinking about, where I'm coming from, and the things that I've talked about in the past. And I don't know that I've ever actually talked about how we actually how I developed, don't do the imperial we. My friend Becky, who was my backyard neighbor when we were at the center, she would often talk about things that we needed to do, and it was always you. But yeah, be careful. So I thought I would just start with how that all came about. When I needed to homeschool, and that was, I needed to do that because of economic reasons, I started with some things people gave me. Somebody gave me a textbook, a little science textbook, and it was written for kindergartners, and I opened up the first page, and it said, the sun is yellow. And I thought, you know what, I don't think I can do this. I don't even think it's true. I mean, it's yellow colored, but it's not the essence of, anyway, sometimes we think about things too deeply, but I thought, you know what, I'm not doing this. So that meant how I had been trained, which was through textbooks, wasn't going to be an option. So it was go back to the drawing board and try to figure out how we should do this whole big journey on ourselves. I've always been someone who loved books. When I was a kid, I would go to the library. I had a bike that had a little baskets on them. I don't know if you know Dutch baskets. They look like little saddlebags at the back. And I used to take out the maximum we could take at a time, which was 50 books a week. That was just where I lived. I just read all the time. So really felt like I had a good grasp on what was out there, what was available, what I thought kids would like, knowing based on what I had liked. So I thought, okay, let me just schedule that all out. I think it's really a painless way to learn. Now, this month we're reading in the Global Prayer Digest about Mindanao. Wayne said, oh, we're reading about the island in Mindanao. And I thought, oh, I know that's in the Philippines because I read it in a book. In Sunlight, we carry a little title called Catching Their Talk in a Box, which is about a missionary who wanted to put Bible stories on records so that people could hear it even if they didn't have a Bible translation yet. And she spent a number of months on the island of Mindanao, and I thought, okay, I learned that fact really, really, really easily. I didn't have to memorize it for a test. I didn't have to think a lot of hard things about it. I just picked it up almost vicariously. And a lot of what we learn, we can learn just as we read the things that we do. I wanted to have a history theme. That was important. That was really Becky's big push. My backyard neighbor, she's going, you know, Sarita, we don't want to do social studies, which is what we all did in school, right? You do a unit on China, and boy, you'd learn that the Chinese drink tea. Wow. Or you do a unit on Native American Indians, and some of them built teepees, and some of them, you know, did wigwams, whatever. But that's the type of learning that is super common in school, because a teacher can fit a social studies unit in relatively easily. I have a little block of time. Let me do this now. And it can be very interesting for kids to do, you know, when you build your volcano or the things that you do that teachers work so hard to make our lessons important and significant. The problem is it comes in chunks of information and there's no big framework. There's no big picture. There's no big understanding. Where does China fit in the whole scheme of things with its 3,000 years of recorded history? Well, it's less easy to see when you're doing it in small chunks. So a history theme allows you to cover a lot of those same kinds of facts, but in a full continuum of time. And time, of course, is how we operate, right? We live in time. We live in a time frame. We understand how the world operates through time. It can give us the understanding of why there's friction, why there's tension, why there's problems in the world. It can help us see things in a way that we don't necessarily see in other ways. I hope I can see this. And, you know, one of the things educators think, well, kids can't necessarily understand those big, broad concepts. Well, at the time, I was using the little Osborne book that we still use to this day, World History book. We use it in Core 1 and Core 2. And I was using it with my own kids at that time, and I was asked to speak at our church about homeschooling. So I was standing up like I normally do, kind of making things happen. And Janelle was there. She was 5 at the time. And I was doing actually the program with Luke, and Janelle was just kind of tangentially there. She was just listening in. And when people tell you they don't understand what's going on, I'm here to tell you that's not true. Because I was talking about how history is important, and we had talked about Genghis Khan. And Janelle, who was 5, said, "I know who he is." And I'm thinking, scarf one for the homeschooling mom. So kids can understand a whole lot more than we give them credit for. I wanted to give my kids a worldview. John and I were living at the time at the U.S. Center for World Mission, which was an agency that was developed to raise up a vision for the unreached peoples of the world. It was started by, and I probably won't get through my whole talk if I'm going to give you every part of the story. It was started by a man called Dr. Ralph Winter, who was a professor at the Fuller School of Missions. He was a former missionary who had come back and was trying to raise up people to go out to the field a little more effectively. And while he was there, he would always ask his students in the class, "Where are you serving?" He said he had a revelation one day where he went, "I could be here 1,000 years and never meet someone who was a missionary to Pakistan or Afghanistan." And he said, "You know, if we believe there's going to be some from every people, nation, tongue, and tribe," which we do believe, it's in the Bible, "there's going to be some people like that from every, maybe we should be purposeful and plan to go to those places." Wow, brand new thought. He took that message to the Lausanne, which is a big missions organization that tries to bring leaders together to think through how to do things strategically. And he came to them and he said, "We need to be purposeful. We need to make a list of all the peoples," which isn't rocket science, it really makes good sense. "Make a list and then let's check them off when people go there." Wow, Lausanne about blew their mind off. They couldn't, you know, it was such a new way of approaching missions, totally galvanized and changed how missions were done. Before that, people would go back to Guatemala, they'd go back to Mexico, they'd go back to Nigeria because they had missions compounds there, you had schools there, you had safety, you had resources there. If you're going to go to a place where nobody's going to meet you at the airport, which is what Dr. Winter was encouraging, that's risky, that's more dangerous. Totally transformed how missions was done. But as a result of us being there, back to where I'm coming from, we wanted to give kids a broader worldview. We wanted to give kids a heart for the world. That was super important to me. Being at the center and knowing that there were people who needed to hear about the love of Jesus. There were people that needed, who didn't have an opportunity even to have a chance to hear. So some of the things we did to do that, we did less U.S. history. When I started homeschooling, every homeschooling program out there spent 10 of their 12 years on U.S. history. Okay, I'm thinking, okay, well, China with 3,000 years of recorded history, Japan with long, long history, super significant civilization. Maybe we need to change how we focus even on those kinds of things. So we chose to do less U.S. history. We used more missionary biographies. Okay, and that was one of those things where looking back on it, you think was totally a God thing. You always want to give kids something to aspire to. You always want to give kids something inspirational. And if you're talking people who can make a huge difference, boy, that's going to be a missionary. If they come into a community that's worshiping spirits and lives in terror and sacrifices all of their best food to the gods in hopes that they get a better crop, and somebody comes in and says, "You know what? You don't need to do that. There are evil spirits, but God is greater." Wow, you see a people group transformed. They go from starving and terrible food and no care, and they go to being people who have hope and life. And it's amazing the transformation that can happen there. So if you're giving kids heroes, boy, that's one that you can say, this is such an easy hero to see. Someone who's ordinary, just normal, says, okay, I'm just going to get on a plane and I'm going to go talk to these people, and can totally see a transformation. Wow. Can we give our kids better heroes than that? That was just an awesome thing. I wanted my kids to pray. I wanted kids to pray. So we've been looking for prayer guides, you know, to help our kids pray for these unreached groups. That's why we do that in the mornings. If you come to our prayer groups, we pray for these groups that there was one month, I don't know how many years ago, where they had all of the people in that group had nothing, no resources, not one Bible verse, not one missionary. Not, I'm here to tell you that breaks your heart when you have a chance to pray. And that was the goal for my kids too. I wanted our kids to have a heart for the lost, for the world. So that was another thing I had in my list here. I wanted to give my kids a love of learning. So that's where the textbooks just kind of went away, because I thought, you know, if we've learned that the sun is yellow, we probably aren't going to have a real great love of learning. And I thought books probably could do that. I know that for myself, I've just, because I read a lot, I feel like I've gained a lot of insight and things. Amy challenged me to make a list. We put a thing in our catalog. It says, oh, this reader reads a book a day, or I don't know how many books. She said, Mom, I don't even know if that's true. In May, could you keep a list of all the titles that you've read, put them on a spreadsheet, and you know, we'll just test to see this is true. So I did. I counted. In May, I reviewed 76 books, which is reading enough of them to say, yeah, verily, I want to keep reading this, or it's not worth reading more of. And I actually read 34. So that is more than one a day. So I still do a lot of reading, and I think that's a huge privilege, and I think it's a good way for all kids to learn. You know, one of the things I wanted to do that I sat down with Becky then was to think through, what do we want our kids to know when? We've worked up a schedule of, we thought we would do world history in the beginning because we could find a good textbook to do with that. We used that little Usborne book that I had mentioned earlier. Third grade, we thought, oh, that's probably a good time to do American history. So we kind of worked out our pattern of what we wanted to study when. Then you'd go and look. You go look for a book that you could use as what we call our spine. What book are we going to use as our key history book? That's often the most challenging part of it because so many of them are just dull or silly or not helpful. So that was probably the biggest piece of that. And they say, okay, how do we broaden this out? How do we make this more robust? And the goal from the beginning was to make as many links in our kids' minds as possible. So you'd pick readers that would tie to the history as much as possible. And then we'd pick readers that read alouds that would also tie that all together. So you're trying to make, okay, you meet Ben Franklin in this book. Oh, you meet him here again. And it's just one of those things where you just remember Ben Franklin because you've met him multiple times in different situations. So that was kind of the goal right from the beginning. Just do a lot of LinkedIn and figure out how that all goes. Huge job. When I got to fifth grade, I thought, because we had decided we wanted to do the Eastern Hemisphere, because it's a part of the world that's, I didn't remember ever having studied it in school as a student, and it was one of those where I thought, if we're thinking about giving kids a heart for the world, this is the part where the gospel has least reached the world. So let's take a year, let's focus on this. And when I was trying to find books when I first started, I thought, there just aren't any out there. I don't know what to put in here. Since then, things have moved in, and we've added more and more books to the fifth-year program as multiculturalism has grown. So that's been a positive of multiculturalism, and there have been more stories from that part of the world. That's been good. But I remember thinking, oh my goodness, what am I going to do with this score? Anyway, it was challenging, but always fun. And you pick each story, and you say, how does it work in the time frame? Does it work with the setting? You always have to figure out, does it work for the age of the child? Because you want to give less scary stories to younger children, and as they grow and mature, you can build on some of the more more tension stories. I've never given children whitewash stories. I mean, you don't want to say, okay, this is a Pollyanna world we live in. You give them stories of kids that are living sometimes through hard things because you want them to recognize that, you know, the world has a lot of needs. We read one little story in, I don't remember which grade, sixth grade, I think, The Breadwinner, which is the story of a girl living in Afghanistan under the Taliban. Well, this is not an easy story to read because life was tough, but there's kids that live this way, and we want our children to recognize that. But of course, you want to do that at the right progression. You don't give that to a kindergartner, you give it to it, but that's all an evaluation that you do as you're working on the program that you do. So we want to use real events, but not whitewashed world. We want them to be gripping. You always remember a story that's gripping as opposed to a dull story, right? You just kind of, oh yeah, next, let me move on. So you want to make sure you're picking stories that... So when I started to teach reading to my children, here's another data point. I might make it through this whole thing. That'd be amazing. When I went to school, I studied... I used to learn to read with the Dick and Jane series, which is a sight series. What they figure is 30% of the kids don't learn to read using a sight method. I happened to be one of the lucky ones. I wasn't any trouble. But what you find is you can't spell for squat. Because you've learned how to memorize all the different words, and you see this picture and you say, oh, that's Dick. Oh, here's Pony. But you haven't figured out why those words work the way they do. So when I started homeschooling, there was kind of a big push toward using a phonetic method, which teaches kids the sounds, and then you put those sounds together. They figure it's a little slower, but there were lots of advantages. So that's what I tried to do. I used a little program called AlphaPhonics, which we used for a number of years here. But the problem with AlphaPhonics was they didn't have any stories that went with it. They'd have little sentences. After you'd learned a couple of sounds, they'd have some sentences that you'd practice, but it wasn't a lot of practice. So when I developed Sunlight, I had to go looking for little stories we could add that would match the AlphaPhonics program. But they were super expensive because they were designed for the school system where a teacher could buy a full set, you know, and then they'd use it for the next 20 years. Well, a mom, of course, wouldn't use it for the next 20 years. She'd use it for her three children, maybe. So that at that point, we started the I Can Read It series, which Dwayne Bolin and I wrote the stories for. No, I think John wrote the original stories, and then we edited them from there because John's stories were... Anyway, he said that was the most challenging job he had ever done because you had just a limited vocabulary. And I saw how Dwayne did it. He did a list of all the words he could use. So you have this whole list. And they start picking and choosing. I thought, Dwayne, you're a genius. Just trying to figure out how to do things in a way that would give kids the chance. Okay, and so what we did was we chose to use the easiest to hear sounds, which is ah. And we left E for the very end, which is almost impossible to hear because it sounds like so many of the other ones. Then you start building on the sound. So we ultimately came up with our little series of sets that uses we use in for kindergarten. I don't think what Fun Tales that's called. Dwayne did that one. So John did the, sorry, I'm giving you totally wrong information. John did the I Can Read It series. Dwayne did the first one, the Fun Tales, the little Fun Tales one. That's how that worked. Sorry. You know, you're getting 26 years, guys. I'm having a hard time keeping it all straight. But basically, just giving kids the certain number of sounds that came from Dr. Beechick. She said, you don't ever want to give kids sounds and then not have them apply them. You want them to start using them right away. So in kindergarten, we give kids six sounds. I think they get B, T, F, A, M. Anyway, and then they get a story. They get a book. They start reading right out of the box. So it gives kids that sense of success. They can move forward. They can keep, you know, they're achieving. They're not just learning sounds in a vacuum. You always want to be applying the things that you do. We want to give, John's goal was to write stories with plots, with real plots. So you've got, in one of the little I Can Read It stories, you've got someone who's captured by a cop because he was speeding too fast. I mean, you just got, you've got conflict and you've, whatever. John, he's amazing. So that's the goal. Geography. How do you teach kids geography? Well, we do it all with the books that we read. It all comes back to the books that we read. So when you read a little story that takes place in Holland, you go find it on a map. Not rocket science, not hard to do. But I'm here to tell you that our product development team can tell you we're every place in the world because they build all the maps from the stories that we've read. It's one of those where you learn geography in a way that's very easy. I know in one class I did maps and I did all the... But I'm here to tell you I didn't learn geography anywhere near as effectively as when I read different stories that take place in different parts of the world. And you recognize the people and the places where they are. Why do we do read-alouds? That's been in from the very beginning. I had one teacher in school that used read-alouds in the classroom. And I can remember three of the stories she read. Huh, how many years ago is that? I'm not going to tell you how many years ago, but a long time ago. And I thought, you know what? That was so precious of a memory for me. I want that for my kids as well. So from the beginning, we've done read-alouds. And in retrospect, looking back at it, we could say, wow! There were so many benefits to that. Taught our kids vocabulary. We taught them listening skills. We taught, you know, but at the beginning, we didn't know any of that. I didn't know any of that. I just did it because it was fun. Sit and read on the couch together and say, oh my goodness, this is the best part of homeschooling I could do. But to come back at it and say, wow, educationally, this was as solid a tool as I could have used with my kids at any point in time. Science, again, didn't want to use textbooks, used a lot of Usborne books. That was at a time Usborne was just coming out, and they had all these beautiful books that just Janelle took one of them to bed every afternoon for her rest time. I'm just thinking, these are gorgeous books that your kids want to look at again and again. And you couple them always with experiments. That came from Dr. Beechick again, who would say, experiments help bring all those concepts that you're reading about to life, that they solidify them in your mind. So that's what we've done from the beginning. Now, this is probably one we've let slide. With math, the experts, they say you should always use manipulatives with math. So when we first started Sunlight, I pulled out our little Scott Forman book, Forsman book, and scheduled all the manipulatives out through the year. So this is what you're studying at this point in this book. Do these activities with your kids. Then Scott Forsman got very strange. They redid their math program, and one of the pages was, he had a mother with four chicks in a nest and said, how do you think the chicks feel? And I'm thinking, oh, next book. Don't care. So at that point, we still offer manipulatives, and we still give directions on how to use them, but we haven't keyed them to the activities. And we might want to go back and re-add that, very useful. Because manipulatives take, you just take things like, well, for example, you would take a paper plate and cut it into fractions and say, okay, this is a whole, and these are how our fractions work. It just helps kids see things. I know I learned how to use fractions when I was working in a fabric store. We had to add, you know, 1.5 yards to 1 3/4 yards. Well, you start learning how to do that pretty quickly, but a manipulative can help you do that very effectively. And we've probably not served our moms as well as we could, but in honor of that, we've given them Mathtacular. And I'm here to tell you, we get very few of those back because every one of our little Mathtacular videos takes those very abstract, you know, math is almost a second language. It very abstractly scratches on a page. And what does that look like in the real world? Because it has actual things that can happen with them. From the beginning, we've used a schedule, and that comes from probably my own sense of really being a person of habit. I get up every morning and I do the certain kinds of things every single day. Very kind of dull kind of a person. We have snack time every day at 10, have another cup of coffee at 3. It's just one of those where I've been a very structured kind of person all of my life. And if we could say to moms, okay, if you do this every day, this, you are done at the end of the day. Wow, super helpful for our moms. And it builds terrific habits in the lives of our kids. If we say, you're going to read every single day, and you're going to actually like it, and they do get to like it. Even kids that have hated books forever, and you can't find great stories for them to read, if they read a little every day, they get to the point where they think, you know what? I actually like how this works. It builds a good habit in the lives of our kids, which is a good thing. Bible. We've offered Bible from the very beginning. I went to a little Christian school when I was a kid. My parents paid off. I can't tell you how much they paid for that. It was a huge sacrifice on their part. And we did all kinds of Bible workbooks. So I'm here to tell you, I knew the Bible stories in and out because I had answered all the little questions on them. And I thought, but you know, it leads to a dryness of spirit. So I thought, we're not going to do any Bible workbooks at all. We're going to just read the Bible. Because the Bible, I believe, is just where life can come from. So we would just sit on the couch and we'd just read those stories together, read through the Bible, and as part of Sunlighters, our families go through the Bible, I don't know, 2 or 3 times, just working their way through the whole Bible program. It was also really important for me that my kids memorize Scripture. When you read missionary biographies or whatever, people end up in prison and they think, oh, I'm just so grateful I memorized all these words of Scripture. And it was something I had done in school. And I can tell you that I can still remember a lot of the things I memorized as a kid. And I thought, you know, I don't want them memorizing anything else. But boy, that is one thing I want kids to memorize. Then I had a Sunlight dad who wrote me and said, you know, people learn a lot more easily if things are set to music. And I thought, yeah, we remember every jingle we've ever heard, don't we? So he took all of the Sunlight verses, put them to song. And wow, our kids have such a huge advantage. You know, put that CD in your car and just memorize all those verses in a way that's painless. And when your kids are little, they remember them forever. So that's just kind of an overview, as much as I can remember. Oof. So any questions of the things that we've done and why we've done them? Looking back on it again, I can say that we can say all of these things really worked. There's nothing in here that I thought wow, God was so faithful to allow us to even start in the right direction, to look at the test scores, to look at the things that moms say, and our kids have loved to read, and boy, the read-alouds are our favorite time, all those things that we put in right from the beginning. It's amazing that we had that opportunity from the beginning. Has it been tweaked? Oh my. As you learn and you get smarter, you tweak and you change, and that's why new books come in and why you dust things that you do. But from the beginning, the roots have been good. So thank you for helping send the things out to the people that we do, and now you know a little bit more of the backstory. Do you have any questions for me? I'll try to answer them. If I can remember.
Yeah. Were you homeschooled?
I was not homeschooled. No. So it's this was a new movement. We were at kind of the front end of it. I could probably talk about the business part of it, because that's kind of a story too, where they say, you know, you're kind of at a right point in time for the company to come. No, so sometimes I'll sit back and think, now how did I even dare do this? But you know, it was designed originally for people who lived overseas, who had such terrible options. I thought, anything I can do will be better. So that was the goal. And then statesides, people went, wow, I want that too. So that was really really where it all started. So good question. So any others? Thanks, team.